to wish you all a bright good morning. I'm delighted that you're here to talk with us about the National Initiative for Consumer Horticulture. My name is Lucy Bradley. I'm the Urban Horticulture Specialist at NC State University and one of the founding members of the initiative. And so I'm going to start off by introducing you to what it's all about, and then we're going to have the chairs of three of our working committees explain to you what great things they're doing now and what they plan to do. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how you can get involved and help others to get involved in the program. So all you guys who are going to be talking, remember that they're recording all this, so you have to stand by the microphone. If any of you guys have cell phones, if you would turn those off so that we don't have an interruption there, we'll just get going. So, welcome. NICH is the National Initiative for Consumer Horticulture. What the heck, huh? So what we're about is trying to create a unified voice, pulling together industry and university and government and nonprofit and public gardens and all the whole arena that is engaged in consumer horticulture to have a powerful voice around connecting with policymakers, with funders, and others to really drive our programs in a much more effective and high-profile way that we truly deserve, right? So one of the things that we'll be doing is promoting the benefits, and the Economic Committee has done a superb job. Many of you, I'm sure, have seen this infographic that lays out, it's called Plants Do That, and it's about, you know, what plants do in the home, what they do in the workplace, what they do where you're shopping and where you're recreating, and what's the value of a lot of those things. They'll be telling you more about that later. Another part of our goal is to increase the industry overall. We're already at, what, $200 billion? Oh, my gosh, $200 billion in consumer horticulture. You know, 2 million jobs that are directly related to consumer horticulture. And we're looking forward to growing that. So these are the arenas in which we have partnerships. So, like we said, colleges and universities, government and extension, growers, nurseries, landscapers, retailers, that whole industry arena, nonprofits and associations, as well as public gardens. And here's a few of the partners that are involved in getting NICH to this point and launching it in the future. So the vision of NICH is to grow gardening, to increase the number of people who are gardening to 90% by 2025. And all of those wonderful benefits that we all know come from gardening, all of that, as we grow the number of gardeners, we grow those benefits. And so it distills down to more people gardening. So how are we going to do this? Well, here's five of the key strategies that we've identified. One of them is to listen to the industry. So to prioritize our strategies and the developed tools based on what industry needs, and be able to listen because of our network, to be able to listen at the local level as well as the state and national level to what those priorities need to be. So defining where we should focus. So looking at not only like what plants need to be developed to meet the needs, what products and services do we need, what do we need to know better about consumer horticulture folks to be able to move forward. We're also looking at creating a business plan to be strategic about how we move forward to accomplish these things. You know, we want to build our strength in numbers, so we want to have, we talk about that unified voice, but to be able to talk about the breadth of the industry and the people and the programs, you know, and the benefits that we bring to the table. And we want to be more effective about getting federal support, so USDA Strategic Specialty Crop Research Funds. We're going to do that by working together working together more effectively than we have in the past. So we're going to be creating more consumers, so there's more demand, so that's more products, that's more services, that's more income for industry, and it's more benefit to the environment when people do that well. We're going to work together in more strategic ways so that we have, you know, more efficiency in what we're trying to accomplish because we're working together as opposed to everybody doing it separately. We're going to have more power and impact, as we talked about earlier, when we go to talk with representatives and congressmen and USDA and whoever else, when we can talk not from an individual, you know, I'm Lucy Bradley at NC State doing this, if we can talk about NICH and the power that brings, I think that we'll get a lot more attention and be a lot more effective. We're going to do more comprehensive research that ties it all together, that allows us to tell the big story of how social and economic and environmental, all of those things come together. They're not little, you know, we keep trying to like do this and do this, you know, and so, you know, how does it tie together as a cohesive whole, and how do we talk about the benefits of that and identify that? You know, the other thing is just increasing awareness of the benefits of gardening and of all of those different types of benefits, the public health benefits, the environmental benefits, the whole array of good things that happen when people are engaged in consumer horticulture. And the bottom line is, you know, that all of those things lead to more business, so it's a great thing for industry. It's more jobs, it's more grants, it's more people gardening. So it works for everybody in all of our realm. So how can you help? There's a lot of ways. You can join NICHE. Go to our website, which is consumerhort.org. There's a place that you can click to put your email in to get our email. We don't do a whole lot of, you know, daily emails, weekly emails, not even monthly emails. So it's not like you're going to get buried. But what it does do is it keeps you in the loop to know what's happening and when there's opportunities to come. Let people in this room who are engaged in NICHE know that you're interested so that we can stay connected and keep you connected. If you have specific expertise that you'd be willing to share, you know, we're open ears. We really can use whatever help you're willing to share with us. You can help us by letting other people know about NICHE. So when you go back to your programs in your states and in your communities, by encouraging, you know, letting people around your state and your community know, not just to your university partners, but also the industry partners and others in your community, encouraging them to get engaged in the program. You can get more involved yourself. You're going to be hearing in just a minute about the three different key content areas that we're working on. And so if one of those speaks to you, please step up and join. There's lots of different levels of engagement. It doesn't mean that you're suddenly going to get dumped with, you know, with 50 hours of things that you need to do. But if you get connected, then you can see where are the things that you need to get done anyway, that you could get done in partnership with NICHE and have it a much broader impact. And you can also let us know, like, if there's someone that you know who you think would be excellent to be a part of the team, then let us know. I'm sending the chairs emails all the time. You should contact this person because they might be an excellent asset to NICHE. Think about including. So that's really helpful because we don't know who those people are, you know, unless you tell us. And so tell us, and we can work on bringing them in to partnerships. This is information about our organization, and you can see, you know, we have officers. They're here. We have a government liaison, and then we have three committees that are content committees. We have one that is community, public health kinds of issues. We have economic committee and the environmental committee. Chairs of each of those committees are going to speak to you in just a moment about what they're doing. We also have councils. So the committees are content areas. The councils are areas of work. So there's a council for academic and government. But we wanted to be sure that we kept a voice at the table to represent all these key areas. So we have a council for government. We have a council for industry. We have a council for nonprofits. And those people are working on making sure that their voice is heard in how we move forward with plans. So there's a lot of different ways that you could get engaged in being a part of the program. That's NICHE in a nutshell, and what I want to do is now turn it over to Debbie Hamrick, who's going to talk with us about the Economic Committee. So welcome, Debbie.
Thank you. So my name is Debbie Hamrick, and I'm the Director of Specialty Crops for the North Carolina Farm Bureau Federation. I am not an academic, but I have a tremendous respect for what you guys do. I'm invited to lecture at NC State University all the time, and they've given me library privileges and trade, no money. But I appreciate the library privileges a lot. What I want to do is tell you a little bit about how, when they approached me about chairing the Economic Committee, sort of what did I do to get started? So what's our work? We want to work to see that consumer horticulture is recognized as a driver of the ag economy. So our committee's assembled of all volunteers, but it's sort of volunteers, but they might have had their arm twisted just a little bit. So who is the Economic Committee? These are the people that volunteered in blue and that had their arms twisted with shackles put on them in black. Steve Mastardi, Penny McBride, Natalie Bumgarner, Janet Carson, Don Filmony, and Clint Albin volunteered. Everyone else I actually called and recruited. And it's just, if I call you, I told this to everybody at Cultivate, if I call you, it is faster and less painful for you to just say yes the minute you answer the phone, all right? Because I will have targeted you as somebody that we need on the committee. We've got five goals and objectives that have been given to us by the larger niche committee. We want to document, comprehensively measure, and disseminate the economic impact of the industry, create a unified and recognized voice, and then the other three. The first two are the ones that we're focusing on. You cannot have a committee. I've been at Farm Bureau for 14 years. You cannot have a committee with five goals and objectives right out of the gate, guys. Anybody in here who's ever done any organizational work knows that. You've got to focus. So we have really made transparent the other three. They're sort of in background, and we're focusing on the top two. Specifically on the top two, we want to create a list of priorities, and that is going to be coming up in just a minute. Other colleagues on the committee are going to be talking about that, people that I recruited onto the committee. How do we work? We work by conference calls. Every 2 weeks, they were monthly beginning in 2017. We have them on the third or fourth Friday of the month. It's religious, 12 noon Eastern Standard or Eastern Daylight Time, and by 12:59 p.m., we are out of there because I want to make the best use of my committee. So we have, I make and initiate emails and phone contact with committee members in between, but it's very dedicated that we're only going to work together. And so as a consequence, I have extremely high participation rates in my conference calls. People have actually called in from their vacations to my conference calls. I can't tell you as a committee chair what an honor that is. We only meet face-to-face when we have to. We met face-to-face at the Cultivate 17 show, and it had pretty good participation there. I had my growers show up at Cultivate. That was really great. And then we do electronic and email communications on Box and Dropbox. Here is where we are focusing. We want to document, measure, and disseminate the economic impact and benefits of consumer horticulture. That is our number one thing. We are standing, in my committee, on the work of Dr. Charlie Hall and his group of economists from around the country. I cannot say, I know there's some folks, Alicia and others, maybe familiar with that work, and Bridget, that are on the committee. We really appreciate the work that's already happened and a literature review that Charlie's had his graduate students do over the past few years. That's the body of work that we've begun with, and that's the body of work that we've begun to get out into the industry in bite-sized pieces. Next, committee member Bridget Behe, distinguished professor, Michigan State University, who told me that she would participate as long as it was going to be worthwhile, and so I live my life to make her participation worthwhile.
Thanks, Debbie. Yes, Bridget Behe, Michigan State. When Debbie called, I said, I'll give you a year, Debbie. If nothing happens, I'm out of here. So I'm still here. It's been a year, and we've done well. So I want to kind of take up where Debbie tapped me in and talk a little bit about the work that Charlie Hall and Madeline Dixon did that's being revised right now. But let's kind of step back a little bit and think about how do economists assign value, how do we assign value, and if we were all in an ag economics class, there really would be four ways that we would say plants have value. They have functional value. They do something. They provide us with shade. They attract pollinators. They do something. We can have experiential or hedonic value, and one of my favorite examples is wine, because that's quite an experience when you enjoy a glass of wine. But I think, and I saw a 2 or 3 year old even walking up the hallway here, mom was leaning in so that he or she could smell the flower, and so that hedonic experience has value to us in horticulture. Symbolic value is another way that we assign value. And one of my favorite examples when I teach this in the marketing class is my husband planting marigolds in our vegetable garden. Now, we know that there's a lot of insect suppression capabilities there with marigolds, but he does it purely because it reminds him of his great-grandmother. It has a high value symbolically for him. Now, cost sacrifice value doesn't play as big of a role in horticulture. Kind of my favorite example is if you quit smoking, you gain a lot by giving up that very bad habit. So we tend as horticulturists to really focus on that first element of value, the functional or instrumental value, at the expense of being able to attract pollinators, has functional value, the scent, I've got lilies up here, and then of course the marigold. So we need to think more broadly about this concept of value. Where do we tend in horticulture to assign value? And these are two examples from good growers in Michigan, but we tend to look at this container and we say, if it is 4-inch, all of the value is contained below the soil. The problem is consumers see the value above the rim of the pot. And so to me, this really demeans our industry when we say this square container is worth $4.98. No, it's what's happening above that that contributes to the value. So we not only look at the function, but we tend to focus only on that container, and that's wrong. So part of what our committee is doing, and Debbie did a really nice job kind of laying how we got there, but the first thing that we could get our hands on that had summarized some of the economic benefits, and I'm going to just briefly touch on some of these, but Madeline Dixon and Charlie Hall published this article in the Journal of Environmental Horticulture almost 10 years ago. And this was really the first time that someone had made an effort to try to aggregate a lot of the research, not production research in horticulture, but a lot more broadly, how do people value what were some of the benefits that horticulture brings to them. And he and Madeline put those in three categories, the economic, the environmental, and the well-being benefits. So some of the economic benefit, and they're in the process, he and Sarah Millard are summarizing this article for the past 10 years, and they hope to have this out, I think, early next year. But in terms of the economic benefits, some of the things that are in this article are that beautification draws consumers, it reduces shopper stress and enhances store appeal, being able to boost occupancy rates, generate tourism revenue, create jobs, reducing healthcare costs, and increasing the perceived value of the home. And when I present some of this, particularly to retailers, I say we need to do more discussion about these benefits, that when you look at some of the statistics, you've got evidence, it's not just greenwashing or environmental washing, that landscaping does improve people's moods, and it also makes them more willing to pay for some products. So there is an economic benefit there. Apartments can charge more for well-landscaped units. This has been very well documented. They get higher occupancy rates, and people who live and work near well-landscaped areas also spend a little bit more time outside. Tourism revenue grows when botanic gardens and arboreta are in different neighborhoods, another example of an economic benefit. And landscaping also creates jobs, and often these people are spending their money locally, and that also helps to drive the local economy, the local revenue. And as I said a minute ago, residents in areas with green spaces are more likely to use them. And what this does is it increases participation in exercise, but the indirect benefit and a very profound economic benefit is we reduce overall health care costs. So again, there's a lot of benefits, economic benefits, to having well-landscaped areas. And back in terms of health and well-being, patients who view plants and landscapes have shorter hospital stays and heal faster. So again, we can tie this back directly to an economic benefit. Just briefly, some of the environmental benefits that they accumulated research that help us provide evidence for. Carbon sequestration, which is a word I would never use with the general public, but they get the concept. attracting wildlife, reducing temperatures, mitigating heat islands, reducing heat and cold damage, reducing noise pollution and soil erosion and runoff. People are, they get the concept of shade, but they don't understand how dramatically their heating and cooling bills can be reduced by strategically planting shade trees in their landscape, and then mitigating soil erosion and runoff really to improve water quality. In some areas, we can have rain gardens. In other areas of the U.S., we can't, but they do have an economic benefit. And then some of the well-being benefits, improving concentration and memory, improving happiness, improving relationships and outlook, and reducing crime. It's funny that we're such a high-tech, high-stress people now that unplugging and kind of rejuvenating, taking that breath and meditating really helps us, and doing that in a well-landscaped area helps enhance that even more. And it's interesting, they also found some research that documents that plants improve compassion and energy levels, and that people who spend more time outside feel better, they feel better rested, and they are better workers. So again, another interesting indirect economic benefit. That's my handoff to Jill. Come on up, Jill. That was the big cheer for what we do with this.
I didn't think that would come through on the volume, so I'm glad it did. I get to do the fun part. For me, this is the fun part, the easy part of the presentation. I get to talk about the infographic. Again, my name is Jill Calabro. I am with American Hort and the Horticultural Research Institute. We represent the green industry, just so you get a feel of what my background is, and that'll help explain a few things about the slides that I have here. So this is the infographic. Just a show of hands, have you seen it? Has anybody not seen it? Okay, a couple of folks have, and I'm so sorry we don't have any here today, but I honestly, if you just Google plants do that, you can find it easily. The handle, the hashtag plants do that has been extremely successful, and it's been a great way to find the document itself. So this is our infographic. Debbie, I believe on the first conference call that we had, Debbie said, I want to make an infographic. Let's make an infographic. And this is what we came up with. And I'm very proud to say that my colleague Jennifer Gray at American Hort was the one who actually put it together and made it look so nice. She's very creative and she enjoys doing this, and she did a great job. We're very proud of her and her work there. So what exactly is this infographic? I've already alluded to our handle, the hashtag the plants do that. That's been picked up. It's been well received throughout social media. It's been used Facebook, particularly on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook myself, so I follow Twitter more than that. But I know it is used there quite a bit. And I believe we plan to carry that through too for other future infographics as well, just to continue that. It's nice and fast, it's easy, and it's very expressive on what it does, what it means. So the infographic features various vignettes that, and I have here on my slide, that highlight the awesomeness of plants. And that's a little bit flippant. It really highlights the value of plants. We're the economic group, we've tried to find what the values are. And of course, on the big slide that we show of the infographic, it's so small you can't read all the details. So I pulled out one here just to show where we live, the benefits of plants where we live. For example, a 25-foot tree reduces annual heating and cooling costs, typically for about 8 to 12%. So it's features of that all throughout the infographic is what it is, where we work, where we play, et cetera. And it is a fully referenced document. Again, this was building on the Charlie Hull information, this big pile of data that we have. None of this is anecdotal. It's all sound science and peer-reviewed. And that's all on the back of the document as well. So how has it been used? I've already said it's been used a lot on social media. I pulled out this screenshot just of a tweet from GPN Magazine, which is Greenhouse Product. Yes, thank you, Greenhouse Product News Magazine, just showing plants do that. Other trade magazines have done that as well. And again, remember, I'm with the green industry, so I pull out most of the greenhouse magazines, the nursery magazines, and those are the ones I follow, and those are the ones I see most frequently. The green industry in particular has really picked up on the infographic and the use of that. We are often called ornamental horticulture. We don't like that name. because ornamental implies that it's not necessary. It's extraneous. It's an adornment. It's not needed. It's like jewelry. But we believe plants are necessary, and the infographic explains why these are needed. And again, that's what we do as the Economic Committee. We have also featured the infographic quite heavily at trade shows. Our trade show that we do at American Hort, it's called Cultivate. It happens every year in July in Columbus. I encourage you all to attend if you haven't. It's very beautiful. There's just tons of plant material and displays and flowers and what have you. Last year, we started doing parklets at Cultivate, and last year we did, HRI did a pollinator booth. Plants that are attractive to pollinators, and it was just a little park. We had some seating areas within it, and of course, tons of plants that are attractive to pollinators, a little gazebo. It was quite beautiful. Well, this year, the trade show floor was redesigned by the convention center, and we had a whole slew of extra space that American Hort could use in our big giant aisle. So we had a lot of positive feedback from our pollinator parklet. So we did that one again, but then we also did a parklet for the Plants Do That. We called it the Plants Do That Park. So this is at setup, what it looks like when we go in. We at American Hort, we are the ones that do the actual setup for all of the American Hort displays, like in the main aisles and things. Of course, the vendors do their own. But so this is the setup, just shows the stand. It's got the hashtag on there, and it's got niche down there at the bottom. And this is what the little parklet looked like when it was all set up. You can see all the beautiful plants around there. This is the other side of the hashtag Plants Do That stand. Then right here, if you look, it's hard to see in the picture, we've got a big pile, a big stack of the infographics available for people to take on a bed of sedum tile. And then two, scattered throughout the parklet, we've got these banners. These are triangular stands, big tall stands, and each one featured a unique banner that pulled out vignettes from the infographic. So it turned out really nice. We got a lot of good feedback on that. For example, I pulled this off of Twitter. I don't know who this person is, and she made the comment. She loves the info provided by Charlie Hall and Seed Your Future and Plants Do That. She took a picture. This was another booth. I don't remember which booth this was. Maybe it was a public park booth, I'm going to guess. But they featured part of the vignettes as well, which is kind of neat. This is what the nursery that featured the banners in the booth showed, all those, and again, hashtag Plants Do That. And then this was really neat. I encourage you to look up this. This is someone with her YouTube channel. It's called Garden Answer. I don't know how often she posts a new video, but she features Cultivate this year. And as you can see here, she has 205,000 subscribers. At the time that I took the screenshot, there had been over 16,000 views of her video. And I bring it out because at 0.4 minutes and 25 seconds, roughly 4 minutes in, she goes through the little Plants Do That parklet and talks about specifically all the banners and everything within it. So that's over 16,000 views. Yay! Let's hope they made it through at least to the 4 minute mark and saw it. So what's next for us? We need to work on our value-added message for consumers. I know last week the new iPhones were announced. You know, there's people who are going to be paying $1,000 for a phone. And that $1,000 phone will do pretty much the same thing as the lower model, which is, what, $850 or $750? So what's that extra $250 getting? You're getting a screen, you know, facial recognition and, you know, a different, more aesthetically looking. It's a status thing. So if people are willing to spend, you know, hundreds of dollars just for status, well, why can't they spend $25 for a beautiful poinsettia? That would be a spectacular poinsettia, but that value-added message, we need to do better at that. That's what we need to work on. And then also for just our customers within the industry, the retail garden center folks and the nursery folks, we've talked about using, potentially cutting out those vignettes and making signs available for them to use, either posting at the retail centers to attract consumers and end users to show them the value. We've talked about, would big box stores like Lowe's and Home Depot, would they be interested in having that kind of signage available as well? So to make it more usable and make it more friendly. And then we're also having development more infographics. We've got one other one coming that will focus on indoor plants. And that first draft, I just talked to Jennifer Gray today, this morning, and she hopes to have it done by the end of the week or maybe next week at the latest, the draft. So that should be coming really soon. And with that, thank you. Again, this is our contact information for the economic group for the presenters here today.